That's 1-800-785-9.
Everybody's talking at me.
CRN Digital Talk Radio, Chuck Wilder here, Tomas at the network. We're live across America and around the world at crntalk.com. Today's guest, Marshall Frank. Yes, he's the author of A Boy Who Mattered. His latest, Do Not Believe the Hype About Systemic Racism. Also, we'll look at the movie review, Those Who Wish Me Dead. In the second hour, Selwyn Duke, writer for The New American. He's got a brand new one, dripping with the fresh ink. That's right, yes. Shocking. Biden has recruited Muslim extremists to investigate extremism in the United States military. Yep, that'll be in the second hour. Well, right around the corner, Monday, Memorial Day itself. So much more about than grilling recipes, corn on the cob, delicious desserts. It is a sacred day of observance, centered on acknowledging, remembering, and thanking the millions of people in uniform who gave their lives for this country. And we'll have a Memorial Day program coming up on that. And, you know, today I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to tell you about some people who served and survived, and they all just happened to be actors or tied up with the movies. Interesting. See how many of them you remember, and maybe you have to be at a certain age group to remember a lot of them. Sterling Hayden, U.S. Marines, and OSS. He actually smuggled guns into Yugoslavia and parachuted into Croatia. Sterling Hayden. James Stewart, U.S. Army Air Corps, bomber pilot, rose to the rank of general. Ernest Borgnine, U.S. Navy, gunner's mate, destroyer. Ed McMahon, U.S. Marines, fighter pilot. Let's see. Telly Savalas, he was in the United States Army. Walter Matthau, U.S. Army Air Corps, B-24. He was a radio man and a gunner, cryptotographer also. Steve Forrest, U.S. Army. He was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge. Jonathan Winters, one of my favorite people, United States Marine Corps, on the battleship USS Wisconsin and the carrier Bonhomme Richard, anti-aircraft gunner. He was also at the Battle of Okinawa, Jonathan Winters. Paul Newman was United States Navy rear seat gunman, radio man, torpedo bombers off of the USS Bunker Hill. Kirk Douglas, U.S. Navy subchaser in the Pacific. He was wounded in action and medically discharged. Robert Mitchum, he was in the U.S. Army. Dale Robinson, U.S. Army tank commander, North Africa. He was serving under Patton and wounded twice in the battlefield. Henry Fonda was on a U.S. Navy destroyer. John Carroll, U.S. Army Air Corps, pilot in North Africa, broke his back in a crash. Lee Marvin, U.S. Marine, sniper, wounded in action on Saipan. By the way, Lee Marvin is buried at the Arlington National Cemetery. Art Carney, U.S. Army, wounded on Normandy Beach during D-Day, and I didn't know this, but he limped for the rest of his life. You didn't see it on the honeymooners too much. Art Carney. Wayne Morris, U.S. Navy fighter, USS Essex. He downed 7 Japanese fighters. Rod Steiger, U.S. Navy. He was aboard one of the ships that launched the Doolittle raid. Tony Curtis, United States Navy, subtender. He was in Tokyo Bay for the surrender of Japan. Larry Storch, U.S. Navy, subtender, U.S. Proteins with Tony Curtis. Forrest Tucker was in the U.S. Army, enlisted as a private, rose to the rank of lieutenant. Robert Montgomery, U.S. Navy. George Kennedy, United States Army. He enlisted right after Pearl Harbor, and he stayed in 16 years. Mickey Rooney, U.S. Army, served under Patton, received a Bronze Star. Denver Pyle, U.S. Navy, wounded in the Battle of Guadalcanal, medically discharged. Burgess Meredith, U.S. Army Air Corps. DeForest Kelly, U.S. Army Air Corps. Robert Stack, United States Navy Gunnery Office. Neville Brand, U.S. Army Europe. He was awarded the Silver Star and the Purple Heart. There was Tyrone Power, U.S. Marines, transport pilot in the Pacific Theater. Charlton Heston, all right, U.S. Army Air Corps, radio operator, aerial gunner on a B-25. Danny Leo, U.S. Army. He lied about his age to enlist at 16. He served 3 years. James Arness, Gunsmoke, U.S. Army, as a U.S. infantryman, severely wounded in Italy. Efren Zimbalist, Jr., U.S. Army, Purple Heart, for a severe wound received at Hungerdon Forest. Mickey Spillane, U.S. Army Air Corps, fighter pilot, later instructor pilot. Rod Sterling, Twilight Zone, yep, U.S. Army, 11th Airborne Division in the Pacific. He was wounded in Manila. Gene Autry, U.S. Army Air Corps, crewman on transports that ferried supplies over the hump in the China-Burma-India Theater. William Holden was in the U.S. Army Air Corps. Alan Hale, U.S. Coast Guard. Russell Johnson, U.S. Army Air Corps, B-24 crewman, awarded Purple Heart when his aircraft was shot down by the Japanese in the Philippines. How about William Conrad, U.S. Army Air Corps, fighter pilot? Jack Klugman, U.S. Army. Frank Sutton, U.S. Army. By the way, he took part in 14 assault landings. Jackie Coogan, U.S. Army Air Corps, volunteered for the gliders, flew troops and materials into the Burma area behind enemy lines. Tom Bosley, United States Navy. Claude Akins, U.S. Army Signal Corps. Chuck Connors, U.S. Army Tank Warfare Instructor. All actors who served in the United States military. Harry Carey Jr., he was in the U.S. Navy. Mel Brooks, U.S. Army Combat Engineer. Robert Altman, U.S. Army Air Corps, B-24 pilot. Pat Hingle, U.S. Navy destroyer. Fred Gwynn, U.S. Navy radioman. Carl Malden, U.S. Army Air Corps, 8th Air Force, NCO. Earl Holloman, U.S. Navy, lied about his age to enlist. Got discharged a year later when the Navy found out. Rock Hudson, remember him? Yeah. U.S. Navy, aircraft mechanic. Harvey Korman, U.S. Navy. Aldo Ray, U.S. Navy, UDT Frogman, Okinawa. Don Knotts, U.S. Army Pacific Theater. Don Rickles, U.S. Army aboard the USS Crean. Harry Dean Stanton, U.S. Navy. Soupy Sales, United States Navy. Lee Van Cleef, U.S. Navy, served aboard a subchaser and then a minesweeper. Clifton James, U.S. Army, South Pacific. Awarded the Silver Star, Bronze Star, and Purple Heart. Ted Knight, U.S. Army Combat Engineers. Jack Warden, U.S. Navy. Don Adams, U.S. Marines, wounded on Guadalcanal. James Gregory, U.S. Navy and U.S. Marines. Brian Keith, U.S. Marines, radioman. Fess Parker, U.S. Navy, U.S. Marines. He was booted from pilot training for being too tall, so he joined the Marines as a radio operator. Charles Durin, U.S. Army, landed at Normandy on D-Day. He was shot multiple times, awarded the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, 3 Purple Hearts, and survived the Malmedy Massacre. Raymond Burr, United States Navy. He was shot in the stomach on Okinawa, medically discharged. Hugh O'Brien, U.S. Marines. Robert Ryan, U.S. Marines. Eddie Albert, United States Coast Guard, Bronze Star with Combat V for serving several Marines under, several Marines under heavy fire as pilot landing craft during the invasion of Tarawa. And for my buddy who sent me so much of this information, police officer Rich, Lewis Hayward was a United States Marine Corps combat photographer, and he was with Eddie Albert at the Battle of Bito, Tarawa Atoll, and both of them are written up in a book about the battle, One Square Mile of Hell. Sounds interesting. Clark Gable, U.S. Army Air Corps, B-17 gunner. Charles Bronson, U.S. Army Air Corps, B-29 gunner, wounded in action. Peter Graves, U.S. Army Air Corps. Buddy Hackett, U.S. Army Anti-Aircraft Gunner. Victor Mature, U.S. Coast Guard. Jack Palance, U.S. Army Air Corps, severely injured, bailing out of a burning B-24 bomber. Robert Preston, he was in the U.S. Army Air Corps Intelligence Officer. Cesar Romero, United States Coast Guard, participated in invasions, Tinian, Saipan, on the assault transport USS Cavalier. Norman Fell, U.S. Army Air Corps. He was a tail gunner, Pacific Theater. Jason Robarts, United States Navy. He just happened to be aboard the heavy cruiser USS Northampton when it sunk off Guadalcanal. Also served on USS Nashville during the invasion of the Philippines, surviving a kamikaze hit that caused 223 casualties. More actors. Steve Reeves, he was in the U.S. Army, Philippines. Dennis Weaver, United States Navy, pilot. Robert Taylor, United States Navy instructor pilot. Randolph Scott, he tried to enlist in the Marines, but was rejected due to injuries sustained in the U.S. Army during World War I. Here's a guy, I don't know if you remember this actor, Ronald Reagan. Yep, U.S. Army, second lieutenant in the Cavalry Reserves before the war. His poor eyesight kept him from being sent overseas when his unit was also sent. He was transferred to the Army Air Corps Public Relations Unit, where he served for the duration. John Wayne, by the way, declared 4F medically unfit. Yeah, due to pre-existing injuries, he nonetheless attempted to volunteer three times, Army, Navy, and Film Corps. So he also gets an honorable mention. And then we have another actor that maybe, just maybe, you might have heard about. His name was Audie. Yep, Audie Murphy, America's most decorated soldier, who became a Hollywood star as a result of his U.S. Army service that included his being awarded the Medal of Honor. And the question is, would someone please remind me again how many of these today Hollywood elites put their careers on hold to enlist in Iraq or Afghanistan? The only one who really even comes close is Pat Tillman. Turned down a contract offer of $36 million over 3 years from the Arizona Cardinals to enlist in the U.S. Army after September 11, 2001. Served as a Ranger in Afghanistan, where he died in 2004. But rather than being lauded for his choice and his decision to put his country before his career, he was mocked, derided by many of his peers. And I submit to you, listeners, that this is not the America today that it was 70 years ago. I, for one, am saddened. My generation grew up watching and being entertained by and laughing with so many of these fine people, never really knowing what they contributed to the war effort. And like millions of Americans during World War II, there was a job that needed doing. They didn't question. They went, they did it, and those that came home returned to their now new normal life, carried on, very few ever saying what they did or what they saw. They took responsibility for their duty, pardon me, to this country, to protect and preserve our freedoms and way of life, and not just for themselves, but for all future generations to come. And as a member of the later generation, U.S. Navy vet, I'm forever humble in their debt. All right, coming up next, Mr. Marshall Frank, and a little later with Selwyn Duke and unbelievable Biden news. Will it ever stop? Be right back.
The smartest way for you to get the lowest prices on your plane tickets, domestic or international, is to call SmartFares, first or last, but you've got to call us before you book your plane tickets. Fly anywhere in the world, fly anywhere in the U.S., and SmartFares can save you up to 75% on your plane tickets. We have the lowest airline ticket prices on over 500 airlines, and you've got a great 12-hour free cancellation window. Plus, with our live agent help, you can always get fast help and fast answers. So on your next trip, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, how about right now? Pick up your phone and call SmartFares. Plus, save up to 75% on your plane reservation. So call right now. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing, and you always need to be sticking your fingers. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. You simply apply a discreet, easy-to-use sensor on your body, and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger pricks. If you test your blood sugar at least 4 times per day and inject insulin at least 3 times per day, or use an insulin pump and have private insurance, or Medicare, you might be eligible for a CGM with little or no cost to you. Call U.S. Medical Supply today for a free benefits check. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill Medicare or your insurance directly. Call now and say goodbye to finger pricks.
800-633-1378. 800-633-1378. 800-633-1378. That's 800-633-1378.
Does your current bathroom need to be updated immediately? Introducing One Day Bath and Shower Remodeling, the complete and hassle-free way to get the new bathroom of your dreams in as little as 1 day. And for as little as $199 a month. Yes, the experts at One Day Bath and Shower Remodeling will come to you anywhere in the country and show you all the customized options. Now you can have a brand new bathroom in as little as 1 day. Large or small bathrooms, if you want a new bathtub or shower installed, we can do it in as little as 1 day. And if you call right now, you can save $750 off your remodel. We make it easy by offering you financing as low as $199 per month. Call now to schedule your free in-home consultation.
855-525-7454. 855-525-7454. That's 855-525-7454.
Everybody's talking at me.
Chuck Wilder, CRN. Let me tell you about my guest, Marshall Frank, F-R-A-N-K, retired captain from the Metro-Dade Police Department in Miami, Florida, where he spent the majority of his 30 years investigating murderers or commanding those who did. Frank is a regular editorial columnist for Florida Today newspaper, his latest book, A Boy Who Mattered. He is also the author of Americistan, Conquest from Within. His blog is Frankly Speaking, where he posts stimulating articles about a myriad of subjects from politics, crime, social issues, radical Islam, and even motion pictures. His website, MarshallFrank.com. Hey, Marshall, welcome back. How are you doing, sir?
Well, doing very good, and I have to, after that introduction, thank you.
Well, that's the same introduction I usually give you unless I say, who's my guest, Marshall Frank? Hi, Marshall, how you doing? That would be a good one.
Well, it was nice, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Looking at one of your latest here, the latest, Do Not Believe in Hype, about the systemic racism. You say Americans are often made to believe that systemic racism is widespread throughout our nation. It's a fire, a forest fire. Those are my words, yes. And particularly on part of law enforcement agencies, which you are very, very well in depth and acquainted with.
Yeah. Well, where do we start?
Yeah.
the amount, sometimes cops do things wrong. There's no doubt about it. I have the distinction in Dade County of having arrested 4 cops for doing some things wrong. And yeah. So if that's needed, that has to be done. It's a bad feeling to have to be the one to do it, but nevertheless, cops do things wrong, they have to pay that particular price. What's led up to all of this hype about racism, and particularly systemic racism, is very troubling because, I'd say, with a rare exception, very few of these incidents that are going on have anything to do with the systemic system. All right? I remember in 1980 when we finished the McDuffie case there, and those where I arrested the cops that involved in that. And following that, the police department completely changed the whole hiring system. Matter of hiring and interviewing. Yeah. And
let me ask you real quick, and for the listeners, on the McDuffie case, how many, was it four cops or was it eight cops? I can't remember.
Four cops were stood trial.
And they were acquitted. Did it involve a person of color?
It involved a person of color, but here's the gig, all right? Nobody wants to hear this. It was a 1 o'clock in the morning chase on a motorcyclist that was going through town in Liberty City near Miami. And it was a dark night, and the guy was on his motorcycle, and he was speeding, and the police tried to pull him over, and he wouldn't pull over. So it became a chase, and what two cars got involved, four or eight. You know, it just grew for 8 minutes or so. And finally, they got the guy at a certain intersection in Miami, and when they pulled him over, he's wearing a helmet and gloves. No one knew he was black. And then when he got to, everything started, and the cops were just beside themselves, and the adrenaline is rampant.
Right,
and the next thing you know, they're hitting the guy left and right with their sticks, and the helmet comes off. And what do you know? The guy is black. But I've always maintained, and I will till the day I die, that this particular case did not involve the race. There was, you know, the victim was a racial crime, and the subjects were all white. And they should have gone to jail. They were not convicted, so they didn't. But nevertheless, they should have gone to jail, in my opinion. I also wouldn't have arrested them.
Yeah,
and,
but you but ended
it wasn't
up arresting
it wasn't
him,
because
right?
the guy was black.
Yeah, but you're the one that said, "Hey, hold it right now. These guys are my cops are going to have to stand trial for this." Is that what you were saying to him?
Well, I didn't say anything to them. I mean, I wasn't there that night. I didn't have anything to do with the chase or the event.
So you weren't
4 days later, but
I
was captain of homicide.
Yeah,
and my unit got involved in the internal investigation of these guys, and it didn't look good.
Yeah,
all right,
absolutely.
But there's more to the story about the leadership of the department. Perhaps should have done something better. But the point is, the officers didn't do this because the guy was black. That's
right.
My point.
You know what? We're coming up on the break, and I'll tell you, especially out here in California, it's amazing. You know, because they've got all these local channels, and boy, if there's a chase, I mean, you know, people get glued. Everybody does that. It's always like, is he going to crash?
There's two kinds of chases. There's a highway chase or the intercity chase.
Yeah.
And the intercity chase can really get the adrenaline pumping because you're going from left to right and then one block after another and running into red lights or whatever. Whereas
In other words, your engines are all fired up as we take this break here, Marshall. We'll return with more on this story. And I got to tell you, if you're watching those races, you know, if you're one of the law enforcement and you end up spending an hour chasing some clown. Yeah, I think you're a little upset when you get there, but we'll continue. Marshall Frank, more to come. Just a moment.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe. All great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. That's 800-378-3212.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Michelle Pfeiffer gives one of her best ever performances as a wealthy, eccentric widow who can't or won't manage her money and so is forced to flee to Paris with her aimless son, played by Lucas Hedges, in French Exit, now available on various platforms at a sharply lowered price.
My plan was to die before the money ran out, but I kept and keep not dying, and here I am.
And there she is, dominating every scene. But the problem is that the story surrounding her is so peculiar, involving a black cat possessed by a spirit from the great beyond, and a collection of odd but not particularly endearing characters who assemble around her new life in France. Based on a novel that did a much better job of filling in the blanks and answering questions about the weirdness that wobbles through this profoundly peculiar film, this R-rated exercise, mostly for language, never lives up to its great stars. Luminous performance. Only 2 stars for French Exit.
Let's talk about your credit cards. When you first start using them, it's a slow drip. You make charges, then more charges, then bills come, and they keep coming. When you open your statements, the floodgates come pouring in. You realize you have more credit card debt than you can afford, and you're barely making the minimum payments. Wouldn't it be nice to make one affordable payment and have all your credit card bills covered? Make this free call and learn our responsible way to get your credit card bills paid and under control.
Sponsored by Consumer Education Services, a nonprofit organization.
800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. That's 800-876-3643.
CESI is not a loan company. The establishment of a debt management plan may adversely affect your credit rating. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase finance and other charges to undertake collection activity, including liquidation.
You order a glass of your favorite Cabernet, fresh asparagus, hollandaise on the side, a filet, medium rare. You unfurl your napkin with a flair, close your eyes, and prepare to listen. Ah, there it is. The sweet music you long to hear. The sizzle. The sizzle of a Ruth's Chris steak.
The most magnificent corn-fed prime beef, broiled to perfection at 1,800 degrees. Some call it a sizzle. We call it an anthem.
As the waiter approaches, you think, is this one mine or that one?
Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Like Ruth always said, life's too short to eat anywhere else.
Make a reservation online at RuthsChris.com or by calling 800-544-0808.
Everybody's talking at me.
Chuck Wilder, CRN, with my guest Marshall Frank, retired captain, Metro-Dade Police Department in Miami. And his latest book, A Boy Who Mattered, we'll tell you in a little bit how you can get a copy of that. And in this latest report from Marshall, do not believe the hype about systemic racism. And he says purveyors want the public to believe that black people in particular are the victims of such attitudes. And basically it's grossly exaggerated, simply untrue, and not in this year, 2021. And we're talking about, 800,000 cops, roughly, in the United States. And you're talking about, what is it, number one priority on a cop's list? Yeah, this is kind of interesting. What is it, go out and arrest somebody, knock them over, lock them up?
No, the number one priority on a cop's list is to come home.
Come home. There you
come
go.
Home.
Yeah. Fantastic.
How can you put it any clearer than that? Every cop that goes to work for 8 hours puts on the uniform and the gun and everything else, but his main objective is to get home that night and not have any conflicts with anybody that would either lose his job or his life.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say in this article, sure, occasionally a cop screws up. I think everybody does, but it's not systemic racism.
When a cop goes to work, he goes to the problem, not away from the problem.
Right.
Okay, and that's a daily event, especially in places like Chicago and New York and L.A. and Portland and whatever. So when a cop takes a call any one of those calls could be deadly, and they know it. So this is not systemic. And the officers that have to react sometimes, even though they make mistakes, they don't do it because it's a systemic system. It's just that's history. Once in a great while, you find maybe some officer is still got some problems with black people. But the majority, the greatest majority of blacks that are killed by crime in America, the greatest majority are by blacks themselves.
Yeah, you know, and I was talking about a while ago about how the adrenaline builds up.
It
and
sure
you're
does.
Chasing, you're chasing people in a car or on a motorcycle like you were mentioning a while ago.
Right.
And I guess there's a lot of times you don't know what color that person is, but after you've done it for 45 minutes or an hour and a half, you know, and I'm talking about the chases they have out here in California,
right.
You know, and sometimes they let them go in circles around the cops, you know, which makes the cops supposedly makes them look stupid. But see, the thing is, I could never be the guy chasing them. You know why? Because I don't have a cutoff switch. I'm telling you.
Oh, that's a confession.
Yeah, it is. I mean, my goodness, you come to find out a little old lady, you know, she first time she's ever had a six pack, and you know, and she tries to run over all the police motorcycles or whatever, you know, I'd have to have that switch. I'm telling you, just that kind of guy.
It's tough.
I admit it,
especially in these days, because you have the government. The government is opposed to police officers in many parts of the country now. They've been brainwashed into thinking that police don't need to be funded. You know, we're from Portland and Seattle and Chicago and so many other places in Minnesota that are trying to get rid of police.
Yeah.
And the only thing you're going to accomplish by that is seeing more crime, and more crime means more victims.
Yeah, and already the statistics are there. They're already there, how the crime has risen, you know, these people that wanted to defund their police. There's an interesting thing here, listener, in this report, and it's about the 9/11 system, okay? And you say they roughly report 240 million calls a year that are dispatched for the police, the fire, and medical needs, okay?
Putting that in context, 240 million, many of those are cats in a tree. You know, many of those calls are minor calls, I'd say maybe even the majority of them. And they're also, those statistics were measured on the 9/11 systems by the hospital systems and the police officers and fire departments, where they respond to those calls as well. If you boil it down to police and also the danger of the 240 million calls a year that are dispatched, about 12 million, this is how the studies have shown, 12 million involve dangers and the police officers.
Right.
So that's, we got 800,000 police officers in the United States, and roughly 12 million of them are going to be involved in handling cases that involve danger.
Yeah.
And danger
and
could be anything. Mm-hmm.
You don't know how serious it is until you get there, right?
Until you arrive. But who is there? Who is there that's going to arrive? It's not going to be the baker, the candlestick maker, or the auto dealer. It's going to be the cop.
Yeah.
Everybody else is running away from the scene. There's one guy running to the scene, and that's the cop. And in certain places in the country, like Chicago, that's a daily event. So I think we got to give the police officers credit for how well they do their jobs, despite the overwhelming odds against them.
You know, and whenever you were talking about that, what you know, you get there and you don't know what the situation is. What pops into my mind is that recent cop, you know, where the girl was trying to stab the other girl with a knife.
Oh yeah,
and
good one.
He protected her, and the whole thing is, you hear all these people talking about, you know, they should shoot him in the leg or shoot him in the arm.
Oh, I saw
a thing. There's a series I watch on TV that I'm really hooked on now, and it's called Homicide Hunter. Okay.
Okay. And, oh yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. and it takes place in Colorado's Springs, I think it is. Anyway, and I keep wondering how in the heck can that many people get shot or killed? But it's a big city. It's the Air Force Academy. I mean, really. But. And the reason is because there was this situation where, you know, a couple of guys were going to pick on another guy, and this other guy just happened to be in training for the Olympic shooting contest, okay?
Right.
And he was shooting pistols. So he was very, very good. So when a guy that outweighed him about 200 pounds was getting ready to kill him, you know, with his bare hands, he
right.
shot him in the shoulder. But see, now he's an Olympic guy, right? Guess what? The bullet ricocheted from the shoulder and went into his heart.
Whoa.
It might be a million in one shot, but it just goes to show you. But what they tell me, and I'm sure you know this, that the reason they don't try to shoot him in the leg or the shoulder is because there's always bystanders around or whatever, and you can't be that accurate, you know, when the person's running or whatever he's doing.
Well, yes, but there's also another reason, and that is in just about all the training scenario that goes on with police officers from Alaska to Florida. They're taught that if they have to fire the weapon, shoot for the major area of mass. Mm-hmm. All right, shoot the mass. They don't try to be don't shoot with the pinky finger or the earlobe, because they start doing that kind of stuff, you're going to miss and you're going to get hurt yourself. So the only way, if you're in a must need situation and you have to fire that weapon, you fire the mass, the main body.
Yeah,
and I think if you talk to any officer, they'll tell you that that's true.
I'll go out on a limb here, Marshall. I'll say that, you know, whenever somebody is shot, right, it's really bad. But normally, you know, it's not a really big deal unless somebody makes a really big deal out of it. It's a really big deal to relatives and loved ones, you know, when someone is shot.
Well, sure, of course.
But then if you've got an organization that's pushing it even harder, you know, it's I don't know. It just seems to make it worse.
Well,
even in this article,
there's got to be something more behind the scenes that's going on. All this hate cops rhetoric from Oregon to New York to Detroit and every place else around the country, especially in those areas. There's a lot of money that's been awarded and sent through. There's been a lot of coordination. Mm-hmm. I mean, these aren't just spontaneous erupting incidents involving people that hate police.
Right.
It's well organized, and there's more to it. The motive for all of it isn't just because they hate cops. There's much more to it, I believe. We'll see as it evolves. And I do not have, even though it sounds like a worthy cause, but I have no respect whatsoever for Black Lives Matter, because I feel they have a very sinister motive in mind what they're doing.
Definitely. Well, look at, you know, the one buying all these big houses, you know, out of their pocketbook, and all the money that's not going to the cities that were destroyed. Yeah. Well,
that's
it's
right.
Working for them, though, that's for sure. You know, I want to tell you, listener, in this article, Marshall brings up the fact that, you know, there was definitely race prejudice, in case you just, you know, came out of the womb and you don't know what we're talking about, all right? and he mentioned, you know, that back in those early days, you know, like Miami-Dade, he said that less than 1% of the department's police were black, right? Restrooms,
absolutely.
Drinking fountains, restaurants were unwelcoming to blacks.
That's right.
They were the only victims of racism, and in some Miami Beach hotels even displayed these death signs that printed Gentiles only. But things changed. And I'll tell you what. Yeah.
And the McDuffie case was instrumental in a lot of those changes in the local area down there. And they changed leadership, and the new rules were enforced, and new hiring particulars were put into place. And before you know it, the department had a good proportion of minorities, not just blacks, but just Spanish and females and things like that, that the department became well-balanced. But that's what you call systemic. Okay. Before all that, there's hardly any blacks or females in the department. It was systemically racist. But this brought everything out in the open. And as time went by into the 90s, and in the last 20 years or so, the police agencies have really come around, and they are not systemic. This whole idea of an officer may sometimes get in a fight with a black guy, a white guy, a white cop, and a black guy, and it happens all the time, too many times perhaps. But it's not because the guy happens to be black. A lot of the people that are killed in crimes in Chicago, New York, and Portland, they're killed by other blacks.
Right. This is one of the most interesting, and I had reports on this before, but You say, according to the FBI, 89% of blacks killed in 2018, in the year 2018, 89%, that's almost 100% of the blacks that were killed by other blacks. That's
yeah,
a fact.
Yeah, in the gangs and so forth. You know, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of criminal activity going on in there, and it's basically ho-hum
yeah.
to the average journalist and police and people in general. It's a ho-hum. Yeah. So many blacks were killed by other blacks. No one looks at it and cares. But if it's a white cop and a black person, it's headlines.
Yeah, automatically, yeah. Money maker, especially for BLM. And as you touched on a while ago, you know, right now it's almost 50-50. When you look at the police chiefs in America's populated cities.
Right,
the,
right. Well, there was a 20-year study that was done. It was finished about 2-3 years ago at one of the major universities in the Northeast. And that is all the people that are in prisons for homicide, 52% are black. Yet they only represent 13% of the population. Mm-hmm. And that's and I forget what the percentage is for whites, but much, much lower. And it's not a question of that blacks are hated or that anybody has anything against blacks. If a shooting occurs, a cop has to go. When the cop goes, it doesn't matter what color someone is in the shooter or the victim. You just got a job to do.
Yeah. And,
but what
you know,
looking and, at, it's a new, the new age of cameras and cell phones. Okay? It's changed all that.
Yeah, really. And, you know, the people that think socialism is the answer, you know, because they've been indoctrinated in schools and all this stuff, they're the ones that say, yeah, defund the police 100%, you know, until they have to make that 911 call. And then it's
yeah,
a different
right.
story, you know. I'll tell you. You know, you had a movie that came out, and I basically only have one page on it, but I thought we might could talk about that. But also, I want to make sure that we have time. In fact, we'll do it right now because the break's coming up in 2 minutes. The book, A Boy Who Mattered. That is a true story about Marshall Frank's son. And the best way to get a copy of that book is what, Amazon? Or
well, it's available at Amazon.com. Does anybody who wants to put my name on their email, I'm MarshallFrank.com. And I can send a book signed by me if they want it, or you can just go to Amazon.com. But it's available. It's a tragic story of a young boy that was born into a troubled family and didn't have a father in the house for many years. Because it's my personal story, because my first wife, who was a teenage girl, teenage meaning 18. Broke the marriage up within the first year of the baby's life, and from that time on, that poor child had a lot of hurdles to cross.
Yeah.
And from the age of 12 on, he was introduced to drugs by his mother, and he was a drug problem for the rest of his life, on and off.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll tell you something, listener. When Frank talks about the boy's mother, okay, his wife. See, she was cool, I guess, so almost like the hippie class, right? And
kind of,
like,
yeah.
Son, if you're going to do drugs, don't worry about it. Do it in front of me. Don't try to hide them from me.
That's
you know,
exactly
and that's
right.
An open window to disaster, and that's what it turned out to be, right?
That's right. And he finally gave up on the. You know, many people were out there trying to help him. It wasn't for the lack of assistance, but he just had his own little world that he lived in, and he lived it by himself.
And there
came
was,
a day he said goodbye.
Yeah, and as we get ready to go into this break, I'll tell you, listener, there was one guy, Marshall talked about, you know, the help he had, but one particular guy, when you read the book, you'll say, my goodness, there you go again, there you go again, there you go. Are you ever going to give up on trying to save this kid? That guy's name was Marshall Frank. Yes, okay, I got it.
Thanks.
We're going to be right back. MarshallFrank.com. Now, the book is A Boy Who Mattered. When we come back, we're going to look at a Frank movie review. He's good at reviewing movies. He hit every one of them absolutely on the head when it came to the Oscars recently that nobody watched. But this one is a movie review on Those Who Wish Me Dead. Put your hands down. I'm talking about a title. We'll be right back.
Let's talk about your credit cards. When you first start using them, it's a slow drip. You make charges, then more charges, then bills come, and they keep coming. When you open your statements, the floodgates come pouring in. You realize you have more credit card debt than you can afford, and you're barely making the minimum payments. Wouldn't it be nice to make one affordable payment and have all your credit card bills covered? Make this free call and learn our responsible way to get your credit card bills paid and under control.
Sponsored by Consumer Education Services, a nonprofit organization.
800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. That's 800-876-3643.
CESI is not a loan company. The establishment of a debt management plan may adversely affect your credit rating. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase finance and other charges to undertake collection activity, including liquidation.
When you invest, what do you need? Investors need foresight and prediction so they can invest with confidence. Is the stock market going up and down? What about precious metals or Bitcoin? The stock market may be treading water right now, but now may be a more opportune time to invest in precious metals. Are gold and silver booming? What do you buy? Bullion? Mining stocks? Which ones? The cryptocurrency market is also advancing strongly, but which ones do you buy? John Truman Wolf, former banker and number one best-selling author, gives you the answers in his widely read newsletter, Strategic Financial Intelligence, available at strategicfinancialintelligence.com. Wolf called the breakout of the gold market and the breakout of the silver market. He may not have a crystal ball, but his investment picks tell a story. Metals and digital currencies are on the move. Don't miss out. Go to strategicfinancialintelligence.com and get the Strategic Financial Intelligence newsletter today. Strategicfinancialintelligence.com.
Do you want to fly somewhere? Anywhere in the world? Smart travelers call myflightsearch.com for the best deals on flight tickets. Going to Manila, Bangkok, London, how about Singapore? Call myflightsearch.com for the lowest flight tickets available. What about a local vacation? Let's say you want to fly to Vegas, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, or Denver. Pick up the phone and call myflightsearch.com right now. We have exclusive deals that you can't find anywhere else. The only way you can get these low airline prices is by calling us. We have so many low prices available, we can't possibly tell them to you right here and now. If you're flying somewhere anytime in the next 6 months and you want the lowest airline ticket prices anywhere, you owe it to yourself to save a ton of money. So pick up your cell phone and call myflightsearch.com right now.
Call 800-445-3166. 800-445-3166. That's 800-445-3166. Call now. 800-445-3166.
Everybody's talking at me. Chuck Wilder, CRN, with my guest, Marshal Frank, retired Captain Metro Dade Police Department, Miami, Florida, professional musician, author, skater. It goes on and
liar.
On. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Frank movie review. And this one, this was a movie, Those Who Wish Me Dead. You gave it an 8.0. And when he does this, he always usually has one or two words about the overall description. You gave it an 8.0. That's pretty good. So in a word, it is what?
Captivating.
Captivate. That's good for police.
Yeah. It was a good, entertaining movie. Mm-hmm. And I've seen other pictures recently that maybe even a little better. But this is one of those movies that has a lot of action, not in the beginning. It builds the story in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But it's with Angelina Jolie as the main female character. And you got to give her credit. I mean, she's more than just a good-looking woman. She is a talented woman. And she's good at this, particularly in this film. It must have been a difficult film to do because there's a lot of physicality in it.
Yeah. I know you mentioned the visual effects in the movie, and I'll tell you something, listener. Anytime a movie reviewer tells you that if you've got a 50-inch home TV screen, it's not going to show you how great the special effects and spectacular effects are in this movie. So that tells you quite a lot. So I guess you're going to have one that's being shown on the side of a building, right? Yeah. To get the, yeah.
Well, it was very well done. Sometimes I'm a little critical about overdoing the special effects or overdoing certain things like the F word. I mean, honestly, I think that's become a normal part of the our
vocabulary. Oh, yeah, that shows you. Look at me. I'm the Hollywood clique guy, you know, F and all this. Yeah, sure.
No, I mean, it's a little much. I mean, nowadays, the 2-year-olds, the 3-year-olds, the 4-year-olds are learning that word just by sitting in the car with their parents, unfortunately. But
So a couple of minutes left here. Let me ask you this. Is the overall thing, is somebody chasing her, or is she chasing somebody, or how, what's the
Well,
what's
there's
the
a number
thing?
Of subplots involved with crooked cops that are trying to protect their derrieres.
Chasing a guy on a motorcycle?
Something like that.
Okay.
But the real bad guys are actually bad cops in this movie, and there's a number of other actors, and the most captivating is a little boy who's 13 years old. He's an Australian kid, and his name is Finn Little.
Finn Little.
Yeah, watch for him. You'll be
and
able to see
him. He's an Australian actor, you say, right?
He's Americanized as well.
Yeah.
But he's a great little actor. He's a great kid. He steals your heart, and I think we're going to see him in a lot more movies. So the two main people in the movie is him and Angelina Jolie, who is beautiful, yes, but she's also smart and she's talented.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just looking at Marshall's review, and if you want to look at it, it's very short, like one page. You can go to Marshall Frank. com, and then you'll see all the things he does. And
yeah, they publish articles. Yeah,
I'll tell you, I usually don't want to give away too much, and I don't have time to do it. But this little boy, apparently bloodied, traumatized, on the run, all alone in a remote forest, because he saw this spectacular murder. So you know, and he's not the one using the F word. So you might as well go to it or check
That's
it
right.
out. So, Marshall,
it was spectacular. And part of the scenes were in a real forest fire, and how they got through that as living people is amazing.
I think they filmed it in California, probably.
Probably.
It wasn't our idea. They said it just popped up. We're all out of time. This is one of our short visits with Marshall Frank.
That's okay. I
appreciate it. Been too long. Thank you, sir. Marshall Frank, F-R-A-N-K, and it's MarshallFrank.com. And the name of the book, A Boy Who Mattered, the movie is Those Who Wish Me Dead. We're coming back with the one and only Selwyn Duke. CRN, Digital Talk Radio. Chuck Wilder here. Tomas is at the network. We're live across America and around the world at crntalk.com. Let's see when next we meet. Yep, Memorial Day. Got an encore from Rachel Reed, author of the book Canine Korea, The Untold Story of America's War Dogs. Stephen Talty is going to be on there. Let's see. Saving Bravo, yes. The greatest rescue mission in the Navy SEAL history. Right now, I want to go to Mr. Selwyn Duke, who writes for The New American. He's also written for The Hill, Observer, American Conservative, WorldNet Daily, American Thinker. And he contributes to college textbooks to Gale Centage Learning. And, of course, Selwyn Duke appears on television and great radio shows just like this one. His website, Selwyn Duke, D-U-K-E, .com. Selwyn, how are you?
Well, Chuck, I'm okay. And you've got an American war dog right here, Chuck, and I'm getting ready to growl. So
yes,
how are you?
And I'm going to tell you, when Selwyn's here, he's not barking up the wrong tree. Boy, there's all kind of little accolades we could use here. I'm going to tell you, I mentioned in the first hour of the show today that you were going to be here, and you had some shocking news to show you how, once again, this president totally out of control. Here I thought we were going to be talking about transgenders and stuff like that. We might get to it. Anyway, listener, are you ready for this? This is the latest from Selwyn. Shocking. Biden has recruited Muslim extremists to investigate extremism. So far, well, let's see. How could it be any worse? To investigate extremism in the U.S. military. Now, you know why that is a definite dumb idea, stupid? And don't you remember your history, Biden? Well, I'll let Selwyn Duke tell you the very first part of this report. And it starts with, it wasn't. Go ahead, Selwyn. This report actually has me upset. Okay, but anyway.
Yeah. No, it should. In fact, Chuck, I'm really surprised that this story hasn't gotten more play in the conservative media, because this is a huge, huge story. It's unbelievable. And, you know, I point out, well, it wasn't a white supremacist who killed 14 people in the 2009 Fort Hood shooting that many of us remember. The one who perpetrated that was a Muslim extremist named Major Nidal Hassan. And it also wasn't white supremacists, Chuck, that we've expended great blood and treasure fighting in these costly wars in the Middle East since 9/11, right? Who are we fighting? Well, we're fighting Islamic jihadists. But none of this has stopped the Biden administration, Chuck, from recruiting terrorist-enabling Muslim extremists to help root out extremism, what they call extremism, in the United States military. Now, understand here, we've heard a lot about this recently. They were banging this white supremacist drum. We heard this from Joe Biden and members of his administration and other Democrats. They were saying, well, white supremacism plagues the U.S. military. We have to do something about
our
this.
Our greatest
recently,
threat.
There was a...
mm-hmm.
I know. Even though I told you this before, I'm into middle age, well into middle age, unfortunately, and I don't know that I've ever met a white supremacist. I don't know that there are any in the military. If there are a few, they keep a very, very low profile. But we're supposed to believe that this permeates the military. They even had a 60-day stand-down order a while back to address it. Okay, so they want to root this out allegedly. Of course, they have an ulterior motive. And what do? Well, they recruit Muslim radicals to try to root out so-called extremism in the U.S. military. And as I ask in my article, well, it's an unbelievable story, so unbelievable that we just have to wonder, is the goal, Chuck, really to eliminate radicalism, or is it to cultivate a certain kind of convenient radicalism? What's really going on here? But anyway, let's talk about some examples, okay? Now, this comes from Daniel Greenfield, a journalist. He often writes at Front Page Mag. He does a lot of good work in this regard. And he mentions that about 10 years ago, there was this woman, Hina, however you pronounce it, Shamsi, and she was fighting on behalf of the Holy Land Foundation. Now, what is that? Well, it's an entity whose leaders had been convicted, Chuck, of providing material support to Hamas. Okay? She's the head of the ACLU's, you know, trouble right there, the American Criminal Lawyers Union, or the American Communist Lawyers Union, however you want to put it. She's the head of the ACLU's National Security Project. She's a Pakistani citizen, okay? She's not even a U.S. citizen. And she had fought, Chuck, fiercely for the Islamic terrorists at Guantanamo Bay. She said, quote, "We all must pledge not one person more in Guantanamo, not in our names." She said that recently. Okay, but now she's one of the people going after our American soldiers. This non-citizen is going after citizens in our military. Okay, she's not the only one. There's also this individual, Faiza Patel. She's another Pakistani immigrant. Don't know if she's a citizen or not. But she actually, according to Greenfield, quote, co-wrote an article arguing against designating the Muslim Brotherhood as a foreign terrorist organization. The article claimed that the Muslim Brotherhood is a religious organization, a political party, and a social service provider.
Wow.
And that it had disavowed violence decades ago. This is what she actually claimed. I'm sorry, Chuck, did you want to say something?
No, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, that why would they think they could even say something like that and people would believe them? But you know what? And I'm wondering what the percentage of the people now, you know, with all of this indoctrination our kids have gone through and talking about how socialism's the answer. See, all of the stuff you and I that are talking about right now, and especially you, you know, it makes sense to anybody that, you know, been around. Anyone probably over 45 really picks up on what you're saying. But, man, if you're just now getting out of college, you're saying, there's nothing wrong with that. The social service provider from the Muslim Brotherhood. Yeah. Oh, you couldn't get the devil? No, he was busy. Oh, man, yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's unbelievable. I mean, you ask how could they get away with it. The problem is, again, as we've discussed before, Chuck, the left controls the culture lock, stock, and barrel. So they can basically frame things in any way they want. They can spin any narrative they want. That's why you see leftists getting away with saying the most horrible things in the world. I mean, the New York Times has a writer, Sarah Jiang, who on Twitter not that many years ago was saying horrible things about white people, that I think white men should be put underground or something like that. I don't remember verbatim what it was, but horrible racist things. And she was hired by the Times. The Times didn't fire her. And like I've said a million times before, being a liberal today means never having to say you're sorry.
Yeah,
but let's get back to this story.
Yeah,
because the two individuals I mentioned are not the only ones who are part of what they call the Countering Extremism Working Group. Okay, now here's a list of people. This was provided by One America News correspondent Jack Posobiec. One of them, another one, is Pakistani ACLU activist Manar Wahid. Another one is Wael Al-Zayat. He's CEO, I think it's a male, of M-Gage Foundation, which is a Muslim activist organization, Chuck. Then there's M-Gage National Co-Chair Khurram Wahid, a prominent terror lawyer whose clients have included an al-Qaeda operative who schemed to assassinate President George W. Bush. And get this, Wahid had also been placed, Chuck, on a terrorist watch list. Then there's this other fellow, Iman Boukadou, and he's staff attorney for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, which sounds okay, but it actually, according to Posobiec, has a track record of justifying Islamic terrorism. So,
hey, let me get in here real quick. Yeah. This one guy, Khurram Wahid, okay? He's the guy you say schemed to assassinate President George W. Bush. Has it come so far with the Biden administration that these people could also become Secret Service agents and protect presidents? I mean, really, does that sound stupid, but not anymore, you know?
No, let me just make clear, one of his clients schemed to assassinate President George W. Bush. We do want to be clear on that. That was an al-Qaeda operative, that client. But anyway, I mean, this is bad enough. And this list of people who are part of this Countering Extremism Working Group, well, a third of them are Muslims. Now, you might ask, well, the left has often said in the past, Bill Clinton talked about this in the 90s, that we want a government that looks like America. Well, does this look like America? America is 1 to 1.5% Muslim. It's not a third Muslim. So you have to ask, what is going on here? Not only that, this working group, Countering Extremism Working Group, also has on it members of the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC. Now, by now, Chuck, the SPLC should have been completely discredited.
Yeah.
It's an entity that's extremely wealthy, by the way. Last I heard, it had more than $200 million in its coffers because so many suckers donate to its cause. But what it does is it claims to be fighting extremism and white supremacism and the Klan and that sort of thing. And it might have done that many decades ago a little bit, but basically it's operating a scam now where it scares its donors into donating money. And, of course, to justify itself, Chuck, it always has to find new boogeymen. So what it does is now it classifies anyone who acts contrary to the leftist agenda as being a hater or part of a hate group. And guess what? You know who was on its hate watch page many years ago?
I was. Selwyn Duke, yes. And you know what?
I
know a couple of other people, too, that were tied up with immigration, you know, like the Minutemen, and I think Glenn Spencer down there on, no, not Glenn Spencer, another guy, I'll try to think of his name, but these border people. But weren't they the ones also that gave out the addresses for some people that I'm trying to think what it was. It might have been whenever they were doing that whole thing about Project Zero. And if the people that were complaining about, you know, the protesters, and they said, well, here's where they live, does that ring a bell with you at all? I just know that, man, you're absolutely right about them. You know, they've come up with people that, you know, I don't know how many churches they probably have on the, you know, the watch list. Who knows?
I know.
Why were you on there? Did you mention you were going to be on the Chuck Wilder show or what?
Maybe that was it. Who knows? Yeah. But ostensibly, it was because I wrote this article many years ago about how Rush Limbaugh was ousted from doing commentary for NFL games. Anyway, I used the term lynch in the article, or a variation thereof, a few times. I said Rush Limbaugh was subject to a lynching by the media, something like that. And they claimed that that was out of bounds, and ostensibly that's the reason why they put me on their hate watch page. Yeah. But I really believe the reason was that just months before, I had exposed in print one of their scams, yeah, how they were lying for the purposes of trying to con donors into giving them money. I think that's probably what put me on their radar screen. But getting back to this article here, this topic, it's just unbelievable the people who are going to be trying to root out extremism in our military, so-called extremism. We're talking about jihadism enabling Muslims. We're talking about members of the SPLC, which is really a hate group itself, to be totally honest with you. So we have to ask, well, what really is the motivation here? Well, the motivation, I think, Chuck, is something that you and I discussed the last time I was on your show. The left claims to want to eliminate extremism from the military, but what it really wants to do is institute its own preferred extremism. That's what it wants to do. When we discussed this on the last show, I was talking about, well, why does the left want to defund and remake the police? Well, because they want to become the police. Why are they trying to purge the military of all dissidents, which is really what they're doing? They say, okay, well, we have to eliminate white supremacism, to recap what I said before. Great. Okay.
There, that music, yeah. Hey, and also, I want to ask you about Obama, because it seemed that he also had so many of these Muslim Brotherhood workers whenever he was the president that were incorporated, helping him out, so to speak. Maybe that's where Biden got it. Selwyn Duke, SelwynDuke.com. We'll continue in just a moment.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Michelle Pfeiffer gives one of her best ever performances as a wealthy, eccentric widow who can't or won't manage her money and so is forced to flee to Paris with her aimless son, played by Lucas Hedges, in French Exit, now available on various platforms at a sharply lowered price.
My plan was to die before the money ran out, but I kept and keep not dying, and here I am.
And there she is, dominating every scene. But the problem is that the story surrounding her is so peculiar, involving a black cat possessed by a spirit from the great beyond, and a collection of odd but not particularly endearing characters who assemble around her new life in France. Based on a novel that did a much better job of filling in the blanks and answering questions about the weirdness that wobbles through this profoundly peculiar film, this R-rated exercise, mostly for language, never lives up to its great stars. Luminous performance. Only 2 stars for French Exit.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you could donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-785-9618. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now, 1-800-785-9618. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-785-9618. That's 1-800-785-9618.
Hi, my name is Lily. My mom and dad used to fight about money all the time. Then one day, I heard them talking about this guy, some uncle I never knew, called Uncle Sam. Well, they say this Uncle Sam guy wanted them to pay him like a gazillion dollars, and they didn't have a gazillion dollars. So they called this company they heard on the radio called the Tax Doctor. And the Tax Doctor worked with Uncle Sam's people. I think they're called the IRS. And they're able to work it out so my mom and dad didn't have to pay Uncle Sam very much money at all. So now mom and dad are happy, and I'm happy too. Thanks, Tax Doctor.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, call now and pay less. 800-391-8713. 800-391-8713. That's 800-391-8713.
Everybody's talking at me.
Chuck Wilder, CRN, with my guest, Selwyn Duke. And remember that website, Selwyn, S-E-L-W-I-N, Duke, D-U-K-E.com. And talking about, well, it's almost unbelievable about how Biden has recruited the Muslim extremists to investigate extremism in the U.S. military. How many wars have we lost just recently, Selwyn? But you had some more to talk about here, so I didn't want to interrupt you. Just had to do it for the break there. So go ahead.
Yeah, no. I was just saying, well, what is the ulterior motive here? Because obviously there is one. And I said before the break, it's not that the left wants to root extremism out of the military. They know there is no right-wing extremism of note in the military. It's that they want to install their own kind of preferred extremism. Okay, now what is really going on? Well, why does the left want to remake the police, reimagine the police? Because they want to become the police. Why are they in the military going through this process of changing it ideologically? Well, think about what they're doing. They say that white supremacy is a problem in the military, but then what they do is they define white supremacy, Chuck, so loosely that it encompasses basically anyone who opposes the left-wing agenda. If you're a Trump supporter, you're a white supremacist. If you're against illegal migration, you're a white supremacist, so on and so forth. So what they can do is, under the pretext then of eliminating this almost all-inclusive white supremacism, they can basically eliminate all dissidents, all dissenting voices from the military. And then once you've done that, you've got a military that is simpatico with you ideologically and that maybe could be used as a tool to do your bidding. What else really could be going on here? And don't get me wrong. I mean, I realize that the left is out of touch with reality, that, yes, there are certain leftists who actually believe this nonsense because they're so brainwashed that white supremacy really is a problem in the United States. But the more Machiavellian leftists, I really think, are thinking along these lines. I think that conclusion is inescapable. And a lot of people don't want to ponder it, Chuck, because it's so scary. But what else could you conclude?
Well, let me tell you what I've concluded, okay, is that when it comes out of the mouth of the president or out of the president's office, you should take it seriously, right? Now, I've heard things, you know, like, well, you know, and I believe this, too. I don't think Biden is coming up with all these ideas. I think somebody's pulling the strings, you know. And I keep hearing, Susan Rice. And I think, personally, Selwyn, that Susan Rice probably and Obama and what's her name that got Obama elected? I keep forgetting her name all the time, but that's just...
Valerie Jarrett?
You hit it right there. Valerie Jarrett. I think they're the ones pulling the strings. And I'm going to tell you something, listener. If you think I'm kind of going over the top here, go to DuckDuck.go. Don't go to Google, all right? Go to the search engine, DuckDuckGo. Yeah, right, I got that right. Yeah, DuckDuckGo.com. Yep. And whenever you put in Obama Muslim Brotherhood, you get things about how Obama and Clinton's ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. But here's the one, is that, what was he doing? Let me find it real quick here. I know it was selling, here it is. Critics were expressly galled that the Obama administration was preparing to provide the Muslim Brotherhood controlled government with 20 F-16 fighters, jets, all right, 20 of them, F-16 fighter jets and 200 tanks. And it was a aid package. I mean, did they have a big flood? Did they have a fire? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, and you hear about, you know, how the Muslim Brotherhood had all these people working in the White House during the Obama administration. And Selwyn, I'll tell you right now, I don't think we're going through the Biden years. I think we're looking at a fifth term with Obama. It's just, it's getting that way almost. But check that out. Well, I mean, it's kind of some scary and interesting stuff, right?
No, it absolutely is. And you're correct about Joe Biden. And that's why, Chuck, in my writings now, I really do try to emphasize or at least indicate that it's not Biden making these decisions. Now, don't get me wrong. Even when he was lucid, when he had his wits about him, he was no great shakes. He was a liar. He was incompetent. He wasn't all that smart. But now the man is a mere shell of what he was even back then, and others are pulling the strings. So when people say, well, Biden did this, Biden announced, that's all nonsense. It's his handlers who are doing these things. It's Valerie Jarrett, who you mentioned, or it could be Obama behind the scenes, or Susan Rice. We don't know exactly who the puppeteers are, but they're there.
Okay, when we come back, we want to get to a problem with kids, blood, sweat, and tears. And it's African kids in Africa. Okay, we're going to be right back with Selwyn Duke, the website, selwynduke.com, SELWYNduke.com.
Attention real estate investors. Do you need cash immediately? If you own one or multiple rental properties, you can use your equity to get cash out fast. The best part is we don't need tax returns or even a good credit score. At America's Loan Source, we are not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We make the decisions to loan you money and there's no limit how much we can give you. Some clients have gotten as much as $500,000 or more within days. Use the money any way you want. If you own one rental property or 100, and COVID has left you in a cash crunch, we can help you turn your equity into fast cash. Call now for details and close in as little as 10 days and get the cash you need. 800-353-1760. 800-353-1760. 800-353-1760. That's 800-353-1760.
You order a glass of your favorite Cabernet, fresh asparagus, hollandaise on the side, a filet, medium rare. You unfurl your napkin with a flair, close your eyes, and prepare to listen. Ah, there it is. The sweet music you long to hear. The sizzle. The sizzle of a Ruth's Chris steak.
The most magnificent corn-fed prime beef. Broiled to perfection at 1,800 degrees. Some call it a sizzle. We call it an anthem.
As the waiter approaches, you think, is this one mine or that one?
Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Like Ruth always said, life's too short to eat anywhere else.
Make a reservation online at RuthsChris.com or by calling 800-544-0808.
Do you want to fly somewhere, anywhere in the world? Smart travelers call MyFlightSearch.com for the best deals on flight tickets. Going to Manila, Bangkok, London, how about Singapore? Call MyFlightSearch.com for the lowest flight tickets available. What about a local vacation? Let's say you want to fly to Vegas, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, or Denver. Pick up the phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now. We have exclusive deals that you can't find anywhere else. The only way you can get these low airline prices is by calling us. We have so many low prices available, we can't possibly tell them to you right here and now. If you're flying somewhere anytime in the next 6 months and you want the lowest airline ticket prices anywhere, you owe it to yourself to save a ton of money. So pick up your cell phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now.
Call 800-445-3166. 800-445-3166. That's 800-445-3166. Call now. 800-445-3166.
Let's talk about your credit cards. When you first start using them, it's a slow drip. You make charges, then more charges, then bills come, and they keep coming.
When you open your statements, the floodgates come pouring in. You realize you have more credit card debt than you can afford, and you're barely making the minimum payments. Wouldn't it be nice to make one affordable payment and have all your credit card bills covered? Make this free call and learn our responsible way to get your credit card bills paid and under control.
Sponsored by Consumer Education Services, a nonprofit organization.
800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. That's 800-876-3643.
CESI is not a loan company. The establishment of a debt management plan may adversely affect your credit rating. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase finance and other charges to undertake collection activity, including liquidation.
Everybody's talking at me.
Chuck Wilder, CRN with Selwyn Duke, the new American. And if you like the music from Blood, Sweat, and Tears, you're not going to like this story. Black Lives Matter, leftist green dreams fueled with African kids. Blood, sweat, and tears. Very disturbing here, Selwyn, and go ahead.
Yeah, Chuck, this is another one of those stories that doesn't get a lot of play. I mean, right. We're not quite as interested, we Americans, in foreign news as we are in domestic news. But, you know, here's the whole thing. Most of us have heard about the sweatshops in the Far East that Nike, the company, benefits from their labor. And we say, well, that's terrible. To some degree, maybe we can't do much about it. But this makes that look like small potatoes. And basically what this has to do is what goes into all these politically correct electric cars that the left loves so much. You know, the fact is that to create these vehicles, you have to use a lot of heavy metals, you have to use rare earth elements, and they have to come from somewhere. They have to be mined. And at issue here is cobalt, which is needed for these vehicles to produce them. And one of the major suppliers of cobalt happens to be the Democratic Republic of the Congo in Africa, which is a very, very poor country. And a lot of people, most people don't know this, but actually there's a lawsuit right now against major American companies, Apple, Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google, Chuck, Dell Technologies, Microsoft, Tesla, a lawsuit against them for what is alleged is they're profiting off the misery of child labor in their quest for cobalt. This is according to the Deseret News. Now, this lawsuit, Chuck, was filed in 2019, but for some reason it's getting some more press right now. And one of the mothers here says, quote, "Our children are dying like dogs." That's a Congolese mother. And the reality is the Deseret News reports, quote, "Cobalt is a key component of every rechargeable lithium-ion battery in all of the gadgets made by defendants and all other tech and electric car companies in the world that has brought on the latest wave of cruel exploitation fueled by greed, corruption, and indifference to a population of powerless, starving Congolese people." That's according to the lawsuit. The Deseret News is quoting the lawsuit. And basically, Don Serber, the columnist, is even more blunt. He says, quote, "The charge is that cobalt workers are slaves." Now, if you watch videos about this, there's no doubt that these African children are working, Chuck, at best for a pittance under horrible, horrible conditions. These are people who suffer grinding poverty and privation, and whatever wealth is derived from the minerals they're helping to extract from the earth, they're certainly not benefiting from much of this. Now, don't get me wrong, Chuck. I want to be fair about this. I'm not going to be politically correct and portrayed as if this is all the result of Western exploitation. That's not the issue. That's not really fair. The truth is these poor people in Africa, and they are suffering, are exploited largely by their own governments. I mean, unfortunately, you have very bad political and economic systems on that continent, and that does lead to a lot of suffering. But that doesn't totally absolve these companies of responsibility, because here's the situation. And the Deseret
News. Let me ask you real quick. When you're talking about the companies, are you talking about the companies that are putting the children in there, or the companies that are making it, like the battery companies? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, the latter. Yeah. I'm talking about these American companies that are at least indirectly benefiting from this child labor, which, again, some people say actually constitutes slavery.
And you mentioned here about how the conditions, you know, there's no safety conditions and stuff like that where these kids are working. So, and what is it? Thousands have been maimed and killed. And yeah, go ahead. But I'm just saying it's so serious, you know, that I'm trying to figure out, are both of them the culprits? You know, let's say the ones that we mentioned, you know, that Apple, parent company of Google, Dell Technologies, Microsoft, Telsa, are they the guilty ones, or is it the people that are controlling the minds? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, like I said, I mean, look, we have to put the onus where it belongs mainly. It's largely on the governments of these African countries and other African people in these countries who are taking advantage of their countrymen. However, these big companies are benefiting indirectly, at least. And this matters for a very simple reason, Chuck. These companies are always the first ones to value signal, aren't they? To engage in moral preening. They say, oh, look at us, we're so woke, and we're going to oppose voter laws that serve to eliminate vote fraud in Georgia. And they say, well, it's suppressing the vote, and we're going to talk about white supremacy and white privilege, and we're going to have sensitivity programs for our employees, right? They're the first ones to do that, okay? As if no one cares more about black people in the world than they do. Meanwhile, they're part of this. That's the bottom line. Yeah. Now, the Deseret News writes, the companies have argued the case should be dismissed, the lawsuit against them, asserting they have no control over the mining practices in a foreign country and that the families lack standing to bring the suit on U.S. soil. Furthermore, they stress they have no direct connection to the mining on foreign soil. Now, look, this is probably true to a great extent, but I'm going to quote Chesterton here because, you know, I can't go a whole show without quoting Chesterton, Chuck. He said, having the right to do something is not at all the same as being right in doing it. And as Don Serber, the journalist, put it, he said, just because something is legal, that doesn't make it right. And that's the bottom line here. I mean, we all should strive to act morally because I certainly don't like the idea of benefiting off of the pain and suffering, the blood, sweat, and tears of poor children in a distant part of the earth. I don't like that at all. And the lawsuit here also states, and of course, this is the allegation of the complainants. We understand that, the plaintiffs, quote, there is no question that defendants have specific knowledge that the cobalt mined in the Democratic Republic of the Congo they use in their various products includes cobalt that was produced by children working under extremely hazardous conditions, that serious mining accidents are common due to the primitive conditions and complete lack of safety precautions in the mines, and that hundreds, if not thousands, of children have been maimed or killed to produce the cobalt needed for the world's modern tech gadgets produced by defendants and other companies, unquote. Now, I would encourage the listeners, if they're curious about this, to go on YouTube. There are various videos about this. They can watch the two videos that I embedded in my article that do give you some idea about what's going on. It really is very, very heart-wrenching, and it's something we should be aware of. Now, I'm going to transition here, Chuck, unless you want to discuss this aspect.
Well, I just want to mention one thing here that and you pointed out, but I'm going to say that, you know, if you hear any of these so-called electric cars, any of these companies talking about how BLM is so important, Black Lives Matter, you get them to go over to SelwynDuke.com and read this article, okay? Black Lives Matter, right? Yeah, sure. Unless, you know, it's the children over there. Black Lives Matter, yeah. May 27th was when this article came out. Yeah, go ahead and do what you
want. No, exactly. I'm glad you mentioned that, Chuck. I'm glad you mentioned that because we hear all these leftist refrains, Black Lives Matter, or here's a good one, do it for the children. Yeah, right. They don't mean a word of it. Do it for the children. You know, the left wants to complain about slavery that occurred here 170 years ago, okay? That's basically ancient history. You care about slavery, you care about enslaved black people, you focus on where it's happening today. That's what you do.
Right.
You focus on where it's going on in Africa. Go there. Fight against the slavery that's occurring. But these left-wingers don't want to do that, Chuck, because that either doesn't make them money, or if you're Kamala Harris or another political prostitute like that, it doesn't win you political power. So they're not really interested in the plight of poor black people. They're not really interested in eliminating black slavery. They're interested in advancing themselves, augmenting their own power and self-aggrandizement. And that's absolutely the truth. And we should never let them forget it. And we shouldn't let them cow us, these leftists, one bit, because they have no moral standing to do so whatsoever. Now, right. This is going to be a very, very big transition because I'm going from that righteous indignation into something that's a little lighter. But this is very important to point out as well. We should understand, you know, some people might say, well, yeah, but electric cars, they could save the world. They could help stop climate change. That's nonsense. According to the best sources I've read, electric cars actually could produce more pollution than gasoline cars. And years ago when I reported on this, I quoted this electric car engineer. He created his own electric vehicle named Otto Zehner. Well, he had a change of heart at one point, and he actually had to say, quote, I was wrong. And what he pointed out is that if you take everything that goes into electric vehicles, what we were talking about, the mining of heavy metals, of rare earth elements, the production that can produce so-called greenhouse gases, having to dispose of these things when the car's life is over, so on and so forth. And then, of course, generating the electricity to begin with. According to these people like Zehner, electric cars actually pollute more on balance than gasoline cars do. But let's just point out again, like I said, you have to produce that electricity. And here's something else people don't point out, Chuck. Where are we going to get the electricity from? Joe Biden has instituted incentives because he wants to get all Americans into electric cars. And when I say Joe Biden, I mean the administration. Again, he's a fossil. Yeah. But $2 trillion, this is part of the so-called infrastructure plan. It calls for giving taxpayer-funded rebates to electric car buyers and to increase the number of charging stations. And this is by commentator Andrea Widberg. I was quoting her there. Okay. But where are we going to get the electricity? Remember, California, where you live, Chuck, already during the summer has rolling blackouts. Why? Because the electric grid is overburdened. What's going to happen when most Californians, instead of driving gasoline vehicles, switch to electric? There's no way the electric grid anywhere in this country is going to be able to support it. And remember here, it is the leftists who've been standing in the way of the building, the construction of new electric power plants. That's another environmentalist boondoggle, that they stand in the way of that. So the whole thing is ridiculous. It's not very well thought out. And not only that, here's something else we should understand. And again, I'm going to quote Andrea Widberg here. She writes, makes a good point, that this plan by the White House, quote, to have taxpayers subsidize electric cars is actually a money transfer to his wealthier constituents. Now, remember this, all of you who still might think that there are some noble motivations behind this plug-in advocacy. She continues, Widberg, quote, the subsidies won't bring down the price of the cars because there are no market forces at work. Instead, they will do what previous electric car subsidies will have done. Make electric cars a little more affordable for rich people. This means that those people who earn very little but still make enough to pay taxes cannot afford electric cars for themselves, but will help subsidize affluent people's virtue signaling car buying practices. And that's the truth. That's the truth. And let me tell you something. Now I'm really going to transition to a lighter note, Chuck, but there's something else here I want to point out. Chuck, I like the roar of a combustion engine. I want to hear that fired up, okay? Yeah. I don't like these electric vehicles. You buzz around.
You know, say, where's that damn mosquito, you know? Where's that mosquito?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a mosquito. Swat it. Swat it. You know, this is just like the feminization of America. It's all part of that. It's like the difference between eating tofu and a nice juicy steak, Chuck. I want to ride that porterhouse, okay? I want to be driving that T-bone. That's what I want to do. And, Chuck, don't tell me that you don't have that 12-cylinder behemoth in your driveway that sucks down gasoline like water, because I know a manly man like you has got to have a vehicle like that. I know you're not driving a Prius. Come on,
admit it. No, I'm real smart. But I thought you could put water in the gas tank. I don't know which lefty told me that, but anyway, that's another long story. Hey, I'll tell you, do you remember, and you know, Selwyn has been mentioning lately about, well, you know, I'm getting to be an older man. You had a, I guess a couple weeks ago, a story you did. It might have been last, I think it was last week. And normally he always has a picture, you know, that goes right along with the story that he's talking about. Great. He always finds them. I think he's got a special website he goes to, or websites. But here was this big picture of Selwyn Duke. Does this ring a bell with you, Selwyn? And I was thinking, boy, if you want to, yeah, handsome guy, you know, and it's like you would listen to him more frequently once you look at that picture. Yes, there you go. Got
you
about
think that
a minute.
Would help?
Yeah.
Yeah, you think that would help, Chuck? Because, you know, I know that that was part of the secret of Milo Yiannopoulos' success, you know, because he was this good-looking guy, so everyone listened to him. It's funny how this world is nowadays. If you're a good-looking guy, you can make it in politics, or a good-looking woman, or in the media. That's why you're so big in radio, Chuck, but if you're just someone who's as plain as an old shoe, you can forget about it.
I'm only as big as your receiver. You might keep that in mind. Now, television, that's a different thing, you know. You know, like Tomas sent me a little note about the Bumblebee, remember that car? And I was thinking about Laker pipes when you were talking about the noise. Does that ring a bell with you, Selwyn, or are you too young to know, remember Laker pipes? Real shiny pipes, and they went under, you know, all the way from the front door all the way to the back on both sides of the car. And they had have your little wrench where you could undo the thing that held the noise back, you know, on the end of the pipes. And, yes, they were great. I had a Pinto when they first came out, believe it or not, a yellow Pinto that had Laker pipes, but they were real big and they were real loud, and I think I got stopped about 12 times, I think. Excessive
was that one
noise.
Of those Pintos with the
yeah,
exploding
blew up
gasoline
if somebody,
tanks?
Yeah, they would blow up if somebody hit them too hard. So I was going to put a little black box on the back of it and say allow 250 feet for the parachute. That's the kind of guy I am, but I never got around to doing it. Guess what? I am getting around to taking a world-famous break with Selwyn Duke, the new American. Go to his website, read all his excellent articles, selwynduke.com. We'll touch on, well, we'll transcribe, or we'll figure out what we're going to do when we come back. But I got to tell you about Sports Illustrated, if I get a chance. But is it the beginning of the end of trans lies? Be right back.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. That's 800-378-3212.
Does your current bathroom need to be updated immediately? Introducing One Day Bath and Shower Remodeling, the complete and hassle-free way to get the new bathroom of your dreams in as little as one day, and for as little as $199 a month. Yes, the experts at One Day Bath and Shower Remodeling will come to you anywhere in the country and show you all the customized options. Now you can have a brand new bathroom in as little as one day. Large or small bathrooms, if you want a new bathtub or shower installed, we can do it in as little as one day. And if you call right now, you can save $750 off your remodel. We make it easy by offering you financing as low as $199 per month. Call now to schedule your free in-home consultation.
855-525-7454. 855-525-7454. That's 855-525-7454.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing, and you always need to be sticking your fingers. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. You simply apply a discreet, easy-to-use sensor on your body, and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger pricks. If you test your blood sugar at least 4 times per day and inject insulin at least 3 times per day, or use an insulin pump and have private insurance, or Medicare, you might be eligible for a CGM with little or no cost to you. Call U.S. Medical Supply today for a free benefits check. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill Medicare or your insurance directly. Call now and say goodbye to finger pricks.
800-633-1378. 800-633-1378. 800-633-1378. That's 800-633-1378.
Everybody's talking at me.
Chuck Wilder, CRN, with Selwyn Duke, the new American. And Selwyn, I wish we had another hour, because there are two of them here, listener, and we're only going to be able to touch on one, all right? One of them is the beginning of the end of trans lies, L-I-E-S, where 60 Minutes tackled the big gender, and what a program that was. Thank goodness they finally woke up. But there's one that I got to mention here, Selwyn, and that's the Sports Illustrated, and only the fact that basically there are some videos in here of women playing basketball, and I guess what it basically is, they want to be moved up a notch, like, well, we're just as good as the men, kind of, sort of like that. But listeners, go to SelwynDuke.com, watch these professional basketball ladies, and you might say, nope, I don't think you're quite as good as the men. It's more like a comedy than it is a report. Right, Selwyn, would you say that?
Yeah, I absolutely would, Chuck. No doubt about it.
Which one you want to touch on in the last 3 or 4 minutes we got left here? How about... you want to do the 60 Minutes thing?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Well, anyway, this was very interesting because I've been writing about big gender, as I call it, or what I call the made-up sexual status or MUSA gender for many, many years. You and I have discussed it on the program. We've touched on just about every aspect of it. But basically, the mainstream media have been ignoring the transgressions of big gender. And that is until this past Sunday when 60 Minutes, although it was a bit tepid, actually did an expose. And what the program focused on were these people, young people, who've transitioned, as they put it, and I always put that word in quotation marks, Chuck, because you can't really transition. You can't become the opposite sex. Therefore, you can't detransition. But anyway, to use their terminology, these people ended up being very upset with what they'd done to themselves or what was done to them by quack physicians and others, and now they're detransitioning. And it's really striking if you listen to their stories. I mean, these are young people who had their sex organs removed, genitalia, breasts, only to realize that they made a terrible, terrible mistake. And how bad is this quackery? Well, time is short. But there's one woman, her name is Grace Ladinsky Smith, and she was giving us her testimony. She said that when she went to see a therapist or a doctor, whoever it was, she said, quote, she didn't really go into what my gender dysphoria might have been stemming from. We only did a few sessions. They asked me, so why do you want to go on testosterone? And I said, well, being a woman just isn't working for me anymore. And they said, okay. And that was it. And she got put on testosterone. And guess what? 4 months later, Chuck, she was approved for a mastectomy, which unfortunately she went through with. And this is terrible. I've said this before. This is malpractice. This is quackery. And what really amazes me, Chuck, is that there have not been more lawsuits on this basis. I think these doctors should be sued out of the business. There's a lot of money to be had here, and I only mention that because I know that's a great motivator. And I can only think that the only reason, Chuck, why we haven't yet seen these lawsuits is that these quack procedures are officially approved by the medical powers that be.
Yeah.
But in the future, I think we're going to see these lawsuits.
It's a gender diagnosis that's used to justify a biological fix based on psychological feelings. Yes. Wow. Selwyn, Look forward to our next visit. I know you're going to be busy there for a little while, but we'll have you back as soon as possible. Selwyn Duke. Go to
Selwyn
Duke. Yeah, God bless you. SelwynDuke.com. Thank you very much, Tomas, and thank you for listening, and God bless the United States of America.